Hello and welcome to Radio Free Nintendo. It is January 11th, 2018, and we are still waiting. Oh, no, the Nintendo Direct happened already. I thought we were still waiting for the announcement. This is Radio Free Nintendo, episode 554. So we're almost at the triple fives.
Good job, James. Good job.
Exciting to think about. Fuck you. I'm joined today by John Lindemann.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, James, with that.
It's not it is
with that
no
rousing
way,
invitation.
It is no way, shape, or form a pleasure to have you, John. Also joined today, Mr. Greg Leahy.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
And Mr. Guillaume Vayette.
Now with new funky mode.
So this is the mode where basically you can't lose.
Yep.
Turns even the hardest stages into an easy ride. So as we have alluded to, there was a Nintendo Direct Mini today. Prior to this, there had been speculation of said Nintendo Direct and a complete internet meltdown that it hadn't been announced. That was more fun than the Direct, but that's okay. I'm okay with that. I actually liked it that way.
I no. Maybe that's how you get your jollies, James, but I did not find it amusing one bit.
Well, that's a shame that you can't have fun, Guillaume.
The internet was an embarrassment.
You can't let the internet embarrass you, Guillaume. Because you will always be embarrassed.
He's just constantly embarrassed.
Because if that's your fucking standard, like, dude, I've got some bad news. I've got some real bad news for you, sir. Because that will never, ever, ever stop. But it was a pretty short direct altogether, about 15 minutes focused. It wasn't live. It was just they just posted a YouTube video and called it. And it mostly focuses on stuff coming out prior to E3. I think there's a couple things in there that are just like 2018, but in general, it's stuff coming in the next few months. So I can just give the rundown real quick, and just stop me if you want to talk about something. It's probably the easiest way to handle it. Press releases are so good. Thank you, Nintendo. So, retroactive veteran, The World Ends With You is coming to Switch.
Yeah, the game wasn't that old, I think, when we did that. It was probably, I forget, like 2011 or something, that sort of time.
It might even be older than that.
And the game originally came out on DS in, what, 2008, I want to say? So
I remember it was kind of tricky when it came out to get copies. I remember because we had to decide if it was too rare. It wasn't super rare, but they weren't cheap, as a lot of the games we get usually are. But yeah, so that game got ported to mobile, I want to say 2 years ago now, but maybe even more than that. World Ends With You is episode 221. I don't know if this is related to that one. I assume it is, but they're porting it to Switch. I guess there's some new content. I wasn't a huge fan of that game, and we did our retroactive of it. I don't know if anybody has thoughts they wanna give.
I guess it just seems like kind of a strange choice, but I guess since they've already ported it, why not?
They've already done the assets, and it's portable friendly, yeah. And it does have some touchscreen stuff, so it's kind of an okay port target. And I think Square Enix just wants to port shit to Switch.
Mm-hmm.
Like they have a lot of stuff announced for Switch.
Yeah.
Like, a whole lot. 2010, we did our retroactive on that one. It's pretty good, Greg.
Yeah, I think it was, like, the very end of the year, so
it was November. Yeah. November and early December. So, I don't know. I guess that was probably the biggest new game that was announced. Because next up...
Depends how you define new, yeah.
Well, it's a new version at least. Next up, there's a new DLC in Pokken. Has anybody here actually played Pokken Tournament?
Yeah, I had the Wii U version. I've not played Switch. Yeah.
Okay.
I like it. But it did the roster on Wii U was, you know, kind of limited compared to, you know, the fighting games you're used to these days, because so many fighting games that even, you know, persist now tend to be games and series that have built up over decades, so they kind of have these huge rosters to jump into, whereas, you know, Pokken was kind of going from scratch, and thing is they never expanded the roster on Wii U. You know, there were characters coming into like the arcade version and stuff.
Yeah, so I played it I played it in an arcade in Japan, and the roster was significantly bigger at that point than it was in the Wii U version.
Yeah.
But I also had no idea what I was doing, and all the instructions were in Japanese, and I got housed by some dude who seemed to just be camped out there. So that's pretty much how that...
I would have thought someone camped out there would be proficient at it.
That's pretty much how that deserved to go down, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, so with the Switch, the DX version, you know, you were adding extra characters to begin with, and yet now, not surprisingly, really, there's more DLC coming. They showed some footage of the sword Pokemon, which is Aegis something, which yeah. just made my head's full of Xenoblade at the moment.
Yeah, where it's also a sword something. Yeah,
And then Blastoise is coming as well later on. I think Venusaur fans are going to be feeling pretty left out because you got Charizard already.
I'm hurt.
Absolutely.
So I think it's two new playable Pokemon and then four new assist Pokemon.
You got the assist Pokemon. You kind of deploy them at various times to give you like buffs and stuff. And like Mimikyu is coming as a support Pokemon, and then Mew and Celebi.
And then nobody remembers the fourth one. Oh well. They announced a demo that came out today for the Dragon Quest Builders. Downloaded it. We'll talk about it in new business, I think. That game has been a long time coming, but again, speaking of Square Enix stuff we were waiting on, there's one of them. Hyrule Warriors Definitive Edition. Guillaume, guess what? That game you asked for.
So that's a thing, and it contains all the DLC, so I guess it's
and
definitive.
All the 3DS content.
And all the 3DS content, so if you want to get pandered to as a fan of Link's Awakening.
Also, that's a lot of game, because that game was big when it launched, and now it's like everything.
Yeah, it's sort of simultaneously a lot. And not that much.
Yeah, that's right. You don't do a lot, but there's a lot of it.
I mean, it is a lot. There's no doubt about it. Having played both the Wii U and the 3DS versions, I know it's a lot.
It's like a whole truckload of marshmallows.
Yeah, exactly.
Cotton candy store.
Yep. Yeah, the gameplay places you go are not that different.
This cotton candy's bubblegum flavored, though, John.
For me, the biggest thing that... they did with the 3DS version was having those Wind Waker stages and bosses and stuff like that. That feels more substantial, just more characters and more adventure maps or whatever. For people who've never seen those, and presumably, yeah, they'll look a hell of a lot nicer in this incarnation as well.
I might give it a go. I don't know. I like that game a lot on Wii U. I played a lot of it. I'm ready to go all in and say Lana for Smash because she's terrible, and that would make me happy.
My one hope is that my one hope is that, you know, more than just more content, I want it to, and more than just looking better, I want it to not significantly reduce the number of on-screen enemies when you're playing co-op.
They showed split screen, didn't they?
Joy-Con co-op.
Yeah, but it was hard to, you know, to figure out, like, is there as many enemies as there should be when you're just looking at screens like that? But there were, like, certain challenges, you know, in the Wii U version that were made harder when you were playing co-op because you were asked to defeat this many enemies in this amount of time and there was just not enough enemies on screen for you to do that. No. So, hopefully that's fixed.
But this game you asked, to Guillaume gets the first win of 2018.
Yay.
Kirby for Nintendo Switch. I missed the name.
Star Allies.
Allies, yes. It's a Kirby game. You get new powers.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, we already knew about this coming, you know, in the first part of the year. We got a specific date in March, and they showed some cute things with Kirby sort of painting an old school sprite of DDD and it coming to life and killing enemies and stuff. And there's a spider power up or something. I mean, nothing major.
Yeah, but like, it's not a huge announcement. It's just the game is coming. I think Hyrule Warriors actually was after that. I think I may have done them out of order, but that's okay. Mario Tennis Aces. Camelot's made another Mario game for consoles, but this one they promise has a story mode because even they knew that Wii U game was shit.
Well, I think it's no doubt that the Wii U game was very much a case of just get something on the shelf for that window.
Yeah.
And basically, they'd already pulled out all of the resources assigned to Wii U. The wall was already lost.
The term, put out to die.
I mean, it was dead when it came out.
Like, yeah. Stillborn. That's what it should have been called. Mario Tennis Stillborn.
That's dark. We're talking about Dark Souls in a minute, John. Give it a second.
All right.
I'm actually excited to see what they do with the story mode because, I mean, even they name-dropped Mario Tennis Advance. Like, they explicitly referenced that, and that's a high watermark to compare yourself to.
I guess
to.
The interesting thing is you're talking about, that you go in different places and there's like boss encounters and mini games and stuff. But the one thing is whether there'll be the kind of character building element to it, I guess.
It's a story mode. It's not necessarily an RPG mode.
Yeah. And the fact that you're playing as Mario, apparently, at least she seemed to be, is a little bit indicative that it might not have character progression. But they didn't show a whole lot, so maybe there's hope.
I guess the biggest thing is just that, like the commitment to having them actually wearing tennis attire.
I was about to say they showed Waluigi in a tennis visor with a coif of hair, which is not what the world was ready for.
After Bowser's hat hair was revealed in Odyssey, it seems like it's like a series feature now.
It's kind of the same hairstyle too.
Yeah, similar. I don't know. Has Wario got some sort of slick back going on?
Of course he does. He's the greasiest motherfucker in the world. He's got to grease that thing back.
He did sort of slick back with the vault. He got the Ben McAdoo thing going on.
Yeah. I don't know. The visors, that video's running, and the only thing I'm noticing is they're wearing visors. Because it's tennis. But it was a new announcement and worth watching. Ease 8 is coming to Switch.
Yeah, that was probably the thing that I'm most excited for. And kind of, I don't know, I think there had been rumors already. I think that the company, Neon Falcom, had already mentioned wanting to support Switch. And so that's them doing exactly that. They're doing what they said they would.
They had, and Nisa had been pretty clear that they had something coming for Switch. And I was like, well, what are you working on? Well, it's a pretty short list, huh? I wonder if it's this one. If you had any shred of doubt that the Switch is going to also be carrying on some of the Vita's legacy, there you go. Ease 8. It's coming. I'm actually kind of excited about that game, too. It does look a little rough because obviously the production values on those games aren't what you would see in some other series. But
sure.
I'm interested. We'll. I don't remember if they gave us a date or not for that. I think they just said spring. I don't know. I think Nisa may have actually tweeted it out later in the day. Super Mario Odyssey DLC 1 Luigi's Balloon World. The fuck.
Sure.
Go find balloons.
Yeah, it's that was like the biggest troll because they were just like, "Hey, here's new content," and then you see Luigi, and you're like, "Holy crap!" And then it's just, I guess you get to talk to Luigi.
Well, that's what he deserves, Guillaume.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just the Apple mode from Gravity Rush, which is funny because that's going away pretty much the same time this launches. You talk to Luigi, and he lets you either decide to go hunt for balloons or hide balloons, and then you get 30 seconds to hide them or find them.
I like how Nintendo was positioning that as two new modes.
It's two modes.
As if there's a lot of satisfaction.
Hide and seek are different games, Guillaume. I regularly play hide.
I guess if you, I guess if you never want to actually look for the balloons, that's there. I don't know. Like, do you get something for when people look for your balloons? I would think that all the rewards are for the people finding them.
I think it was if they didn't find it, you got rewards. So if somebody challenged yours and didn't find it, you got rewarded. Or maybe a reward on how long it takes them. So if you like put it right next to the start point, then like you get nothing. But you get if you're hiding. You have 30 seconds to hide it somewhere in the stage, which is like a neat way of seeing, how well do you know the stage architecture? I'm a little concerned that time isn't nearly enough. especially in things like New Donk City, where you're going to have to climb buildings and stuff if you want to really go somewhere stupid.
Well, you might have, who knows, like maybe you can start from any of the checkpoints, which
maybe.
would enlarge the playing field a whole lot.
I actually like the idea of hiding them in the stages everyone hates, though, because there are stages people just don't go to or spend less time in because they're just not particularly fun to play. You have a much better chance of being able to hide them in those places. Get those coins so you can buy that new clothes, including the Mario in a suit of armor. I still haven't bought the skeleton because that's a stupid amount of money.
Yeah, I've played quite a bit with that. I find it fun. The ending cinematic is pretty good with the.
I would love to know what Bowser says when you're wearing it. Let's put it that way. But
yeah, he does, because it's funny how many different I've seen a video like the Bowser's got quite a few different spiels for different outfits that you can wear.
I imagine the skeleton one is probably just the one where he's scared.
Yeah, there's a few, I think, where he expresses some sort of intimidation factor, and that'll be one of them.
Dude, Mario, what happened? But yeah, I've not got the time for that one. It's a thing. But I want to say they said they weren't going to make DLC stages for it, so I get it. Like, this is just something.
Yeah, it's a free update, really.
Yeah, this is just something they could throw together in the game and not really have to create much in the way of new assets and just make a new engine, a new kind of way to keep people poking at the game. SNK Heroines.
Yeah, so a lot of people are actually, like, they're really looking forward to it, and I'm not sure why.
Yeah, I am.
Well, okay, so it's some sort of spiritual successor to Galfighters, which I don't know what it is.
I guess?
I guess the biggest thing that I took away from the very small amount of time that I had on it kind of mentioned something about one button, like specials or something. I was wondering, is that the hook of this, that it's like a kind of more simple than you generally associate with SNK fighters?
It's not a one button fighting game, which is some people write it. Basically, there's a specials button. There have been a couple games recently that have experimented with this, because one of the things about getting into fighting games is that people seem to think it's about, like, you have to learn all these button inputs. Well, not really. Like, there's a good to know, but that's not really what the game is about. Like, the game is about how you play it and where you go and how you fight and how you do your, like, the tactics of fighting. Not so much do you know how to make the Hadouken come out. So putting your specials on a button, which is something that a lot of games do now, just means that anybody will be able to pop a special when it's time. SNK games do have some inputs. Let's put it that way. But I'm just kind of excited about what dumb pulls SNK is going to put in this game, because if SNK has got anything, they've got a shit ton of female characters they could pull from. And I just kind of like SNK game. I like that SNK is back.
So I understand that they've got a lot of characters, but do they have anyone I know? The thing is, like, it seems to be going for nostalgia for something I have absolutely no idea.
I guarantee you've seen and would recognize Mai Shiranui. You would absolutely recognize her. You may not know the name, but if you saw her, you go, oh, I know who that is.
I don't, you know, I'm not a DeviantArt regular.
No, she's kind of permeated through fighting games and through cults. Like, she's been around for a long time. I'm not counting on pulls like Cham Cham to show up in this, although that's what I've been calling for at this point. But like, there are characters in here you will recognize. Obviously, they're not gonna be, if you're not down with the SNK, they're obviously not gonna have the same resonance for you that they would for somebody who's super big into SNK fighting games. But I'm excited to see some characters I like show up. I'm excited to see if some of the Metal Slug characters show up. Because there are some female Metal Slug characters that could be in there. Because, like, who knows what they're going to do with this thing. On their webpage, they've got the four or five known characters colored in. And they've got a bunch that are blacked out. And people are trying to speculate who those are. There's some that it's more obvious than others. I just kind of like what this game is. It just looked fun. So I'm excited to play a fighting game that's just fun. You know, I'm kind of shit at fighting games, and SNK games are brutal games to be shit at because you can get housed pretty quick. And this just looks like it'll be a fun thing to play with and goof around with. And yeah, I'm interested. It was a nice surprise. I do like that one of the features they immediately dropped is you can customize your character so people know what you're interested in. It's like, okay, here comes this. All right.
So, I don't know. Like, because I've kind of stayed away from every SNK fighter because they all seem to have some sort of, I don't know, like all the reviews I've seen for stuff like Art of Fighting, like they all have caveats or like, oh, well, you should really wait for the release of that other game. And like, then like that game comes out and like, oh yeah, like super duper fighting fans are love this game because it's incredibly complex. And I'm like, okay, so I guess I was waiting for nothing.
Samurai Showdown, for example, can be really tough to learn. But I still loved playing it when I was younger. Like I very rarely won when somebody else got on the system. But like I enjoyed playing it.
Sure. Well, it looked good, and there was blood,
and it played well.
The camera, like, yeah, that panned out, and
yeah, I mean it plays well. It's a tough game, but I would say it's fair, but it's not because SNK bosses are never fair. But Guillaume, if you're not sure about this game, let me give you an offer. For $119, you can get the Diamond Dream Edition,
ooh,
which includes the game, an art book, a 2-disc soundtrack, a lapel pin set, a sleeveless shirt, size large, because, haha, a quote, fatal cutie cap, which I have no idea what that is, but I need to know now, a workout towel that's 12 by 42 inches, a workout sweatband, and a deluxe collector's box. So if you're not sure, maybe you should just go all in. I think John's already pre-ordered it.
Am I supposed to think that it's a coincidence that the initials of this deluxe edition are DD?
I mean, what is coincidence in a world of happenstance, Guillaume?
Anyway,
I don't know. This was the thing for me that I was like, okay, nope. You know what? I know what I'm doing when this game comes out, and it's sucking at this game online, probably. Hopefully it's online. I don't know if they ever actually confirmed that. It's gotta be. And some of the images that they put out after the direct are just stupid enough to make me happy. So it's fun. They also announced Art of Fighting 2 was coming out today on Arcade Classics Neo Geo. I don't know if we do that or not. I know it was on the list because that list is gigantic. Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle DLC Numero Dos, playable Donkey Kong, and Tiki World. So Guillaume, you know you were excited about the Donkey Kong Rabbit, but now you get to be the Donkey Kong.
Yeah,
you can have your love of the big ape fighting your love of the big rabbit ape.
Yeah, well, I'm probably 40 hours away from any kind of ending in Mario plus Rabbids, so we'll get there when we get there.
Fair enough. Well, you have a little time to wait for that, anyways. You're fine. Payday 2 is finally coming out on Switch. That seems like it took forever. There's an exclusive character on it. Fee, they was shown. I don't know that it was an announcement, though. I think we knew it was coming. I think we may have just gotten a date.
Well, it's kind of, that's the game that traces back to all the hysteria about there being a direct because of EA's
yes.
leaks.
That's right. We knew that because of the leaks. Yes. And then we got to see some video of Fee and Celeste, which are both coming relatively soon. And then because Donkey Kong wasn't done scaring the kids in a giant costume at an event for a Donkey Kong game.
That video's classic.
Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze is coming to Switch with the easy mode. In the form,
that's underselling the sheer attitude contained. I love the way they made the spiel as like 90s as possible.
It's the funkiest of Kong. It's coming out May 4th. That's the only one I had the dates for in my notes for whatever reason. It's the funky Kong is on the box in the corner.
I think the phrase bodacious dude was used at some point.
It sure was. So the internet has already cut Funky off of that box and has now made it available for you to use in other places.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But basically, Funky Kong is, he can bounce off. Oh, he's literally riding a surf wave in the top corner that's peeling down the main image. And they refer to it as new funky mode.
I look forward to that being applied to like the 4-hour version of Das Boot or whatever.
Oh god. Right. So far I've got it on Dark Souls in front of me, which is pretty good.
Well, yeah.
So yeah, basically he can bounce on spikes, he can hover, he can surf through enemies with an infinite roll. Basically he's unbeatable. So yeah, but as you said, he is a bodacious dude, so that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Also, maybe we'll finally get to understand when nobody can realize he's just Donkey Kong in a bandana and sunglasses. Do you ever see them in the same place at the same time?
Yes.
Yeah, I've
He sees Donkey Kong sees them. You're seeing through his eyes.
I'm pretty sure they've
his other personality.
I'm pretty sure they've been on the same racing track at the same time in Mario Kart Wii, but let's be fair, like Mario's on there with his baby self, so
that's right. I mean, that's, you don't know what's going on.
But also in the Super Nintendo games, they are definitely on the same screen. But if you're implying that Funky Kong has been killed and replaced since then by Donkey Kong, then I guess so.
I'm implying that Funky only exists in Donkey Kong's head.
He's
the persona that Donkey Kong wishes he was and has created him as a separate personality.
It's like the mechanic. The machinist, I mean.
Yes.
The Christian Bale. Yeah, definitely. It's a manifestation of his guilt for being too much of a bodacious dude as a younger age.
Oh, God.
This is the canon now. I apologize to Nintendo. We've set the new canon. The new canon is that Donkey Kong is a bodacious person.
Originally, it was just, you know, Rare getting their money's worth out of their, you know, ACM, as they used to call it, model, pre-rendered Kong models. But, you know, it's not such a thing now. They could have made Funky a bit more different than he used to be. But
I wish they drove it more like the tie was like just barely poking out of the shirt. Like he's just tried to hide it there real fast when somebody walked in.
The half tuck of the tie.
Yeah, it's like poking out the side, and like when you see him occasionally like move it so it's not so visible. Like bananas fall off his, like out of his hand sometimes. Don't know where those came from. I mean it's Donkey Kong just bleaching his hair, let's be honest. That's not real blonde hair. Beyond that startling revelation of what is coming to Switch. I think it's down to the last item. I think it's Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'm missing anything.
Payday?
No, covered that by.
Yeah, like I said, it's finally coming out. Because it was announced like during the event in January last year.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, Dark Souls, May 25th, Dark Souls Remastered. So it's the first Dark Souls game. It's coming to everything, so the fact it's coming to Nintendo is kind of nice.
Yep, comes with the Artorias of the Abyss DLC.
Yep,
and lower frame rate than on other platforms. I think they're aiming for 30 frames per second. I think it's 720p in handheld and 1080p in TV mode.
Okay, so. I mean that's still 30 frames is still more than trying to play it on the Xbox 360.
Sure.
Yeah, I think it is a last. Well, this is a new version of it that will be on the current platforms, you know, like PS4. Yep. But it's originally a last gen game. You would hope it wouldn't be too taxing.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, going through the I don't remember what the name of the town is. Blight Town on the 360 was a nightmare. Not because it was hard, but because your frame rate might be single digits, which made that game really hard to play.
Yeah. That game too, where it's so exacting and demanding.
And that's right at the beginning of the game too, because fuck you, that's why. So yeah, I mean, I'll be interested to see if I can get into that game this time. I gave up.
Yeah, I've never given any of those games a try. I mean, you know, you hear plenty about it that sounds interesting and you'd like to try them, but it's similar to what I've talked about with other series like the Elder Scrolls and all that. I just never really felt like I could do it justice, you know, with the way I play. yeah, PS3 in the past or Xbox
One.
Yeah,
for all of those games like Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, Bloodborne, it's kind of like, yeah, you know, Bloodborne's a little bit faster paced, but it's like all those games are kind of like just pack yourself a lunch. You're going to be there a while. You
and you might spend 20 hours trying to kill this one boss.
Yeah, exactly. So
I quit on that game because apparently they patched this so this can't happen anymore. But when that game came out, there's a status effect that cuts your max life in half, and you can get it lifted, but you have to go to a place and find the thing that can lift it. And when the game came out, it could stack, so you could get cursed again and again. And I was down to like 1/8 of my life bar, which meant everything killed me. And I was like, nope, this save's fucked. So I gave up on that game. Apparently they patched it so it doesn't stack anymore. But that had to have been done deliberately, which is fucking evil. So, you know, I'll be interested to see what this game is 5 or 6 years. This game's almost 7 or 8 years old now. With the benefit of having made multiple games of the series and similar games, what refinements they've made to it, and maybe I'll actually be able to ride the wave this time so many years later. But that pretty much does it. Maybe I missed one or two little things in here or there, but I think that's pretty much everything. Thoughts? I know we kind of gave thoughts on things individually, but like overall.
Well, you're certainly going to have a very strong Wii U presence in the first half of this year. When we already knew about Bayonetta, that has not been, you know, right. They didn't cover that again because it's going to be, you know, February, it's quite shortly. But you with Bayonetta, Hyrule Warriors, and DK Tropical Freeze, that's, you know.
And they're still pushing Pokken.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you know, I mean, there's a few things that will be getting the sort of support there, you know, on the back end as well. But yeah, it's not a shock, you know, considering yeah, they do want to maintain this sort of pace of games coming out, you know, and maintain the sort of momentum that they've built up with the system. And you've got game, certainly a bit, Tropical Freeze, a big fan of that game. It's really, really high quality, in my opinion. It's nice to hopefully more
bodacious.
I don't even really know what bodacious means. It's just empty.
Well, I'm going to show
it
you.
Means,
it's
it
just
means,
like how...
Yeah, you have to live bodacious to know bodacious.
I really do. I very much haven't, as you might imagine. But, you know, it's good that that's going to get another sort of chance. Obviously, Hyrule Warriors is something that already did get another chance. And also, it's kind of funny because, I mean, we do have Fire Emblem Warriors as well. Yes. Some of the time, it's kind of interesting, like we get Hyrule Warriors after Fire Emblem. We're getting Tropical Freeze after Kirby, which is going to kind of, you know, be an original side-scrolling game. Of course, I imagine it'll be quite different in a lot of ways, you know, the sense that Kirby is very much unlikely to need a character to be crowbarred in to make the game easy.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kirby is always in funky mode.
Yeah, funky mode is preloaded.
I will admit, the final boss of Tropical Freeze is a real bastard, and funky mode in that may have been appealing.
Oh, God, yeah. No, I mean, but as I said it plenty of times, boss is too long in that game. It's a classic retro failing, but it very much applies to that as well.
That boss fight in particular.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm more tolerant of it in last bosses because it's like, well, it's the last one, you know, okay. But yeah, it's still, it'd be nice if rather than just, it seems like a bit of a quick and dirty thing just to have a character that's really, you know, forgiving rather than actually going in and making
what if we
some
took the strength
to...
of every character and then put them into one character and then also let him roll forever.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. So like I said, it would be nice if they actually like made a few little tweaks to things here, because I'm sure there was probably a certain amount of rushing with Tropical Freeze, because back then it was the whole sort of panic to try and save Wii U, which, you know,
the Wii U sales panic, yes,
it couldn't be saved. So,
no,
but I'm glad it's getting another go, but I mean, I don't know whether it's going to set the world on fire, and then So, and then of course you got the Bayonetta games, which is kind of a dual thing because it's not only going to help pad out the first half of this year, but it's kind of paving the way for whenever Bayonetta 3, you know, starts to get rolling eventually.
Right. So do you think that we're due to get a new Donkey Kong Country Returns announcement soon or what?
Maybe not soon, but I could see one. Honestly, like Nintendo doesn't necessarily need retro to make it.
Right.
Like, certainly they've set a template that can be followed for those games. And, yeah, you know, whether or not somebody could iterate on that series the same way retro did from their first game to their second, I don't know. But I wouldn't be surprised if we get another one. What Wii U games are we still missing? Like, I know Xenoblade X. I know Tokyo Mirage Sessions.
Yeah.
Captain Toad.
There's the Eternal Smash question, which I think now, like, we get this email periodically. We're like, what's the point where they can't port Smash anymore?
Yeah.
And I, you know, that one, we get that question once every 3 or so months. And I think we're maybe starting to get there where it's like, okay, the Switch has been out a year or a year and a half. And Smash came out relatively early in the Wii U's life cycle compared to, you know, when it usually comes out, at least when it feels, except for Melee, which came out pretty late. Are pretty early, but like there's this weird sense of like, okay, maybe it's been a while now, maybe there's already been a lot of Wii U ports, maybe it's time to have a new one.
I've said before, I think the biggest sort of point where the kind of win probability graph really kind of changes is after E3, if you don't get anything then. And that's the thing, I mean, this is all kind of befitting the direct mini format and all that.
Right.
Nothing too major. And there's a number of bigger questions I'm sure people are interested in, you know, hearing about. Like, you know, Smash, you would be one, but also the
Fire
online
Emblem
stuff. I think,
oh, yeah,
you know, considering originally it was supposed to be good to go for Splatoon 2, yes?
Are you suggesting that the mobile app wasn't good to go?
Yeah, I'm just, you know, it's you do wonder how deep into the year it's going to go now, because of course things have gone so well, you know, commercially.
Yes.
It's a preposterous sales pace considering some of the supply constraints. You do wonder if they might be a bit reticent to mess with that as well. That might have increased how reluctant they are to bring that forward.
I wonder if they would even go so far as to say, you know what, it's not pay for online, but there's a service. Like, go back to more like the PS Plus model. The PS Plus model last generation, to be more specific.
Yeah, when it was originally introduced.
And then pull what Sony did, and you know, boil the lobster slowly. As opposed to just going like flashing, all right, internet's turning off, and tomorrow if you don't give us some cash.
Yeah, I feel like it didn't surprise me we didn't get anything, you know, on larger questions like that.
Yeah. So the only other games I can think of from the port question are the Mario games. Mario Maker, 3D World, New Super Mario Brothers U, and Luigi. Like, I could totally see them porting 3D World. Or hell, we have the Mario Maker question of, okay, at what point do you make a new Mario Maker? Can you make a new Mario Maker? Like, what's there to make? But, I mean, they are starting to run out of things to port. Like, it's like I say that without any sense of irony or as a joke.
I don't know. There's a lot of things I want. Like, I wouldn't mind actually. Like, I don't know. I like the new Super Mario Brothers games. I wouldn't mind seeing one of those, a port or a new one. But also, Jackbox is all well and good, but I would like to be able to play some sort of me multiplayer game with my parents over the holidays. You know, like a Wii Sports Resort port or remake would make my day.
You're going even back past the Wii U then.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, they started remaking the original Wii Sports games for the Wii U.
Oh God,
it kind of took a long time for them to come out. I would hope that a new Wii Sports Resort would, I don't know, come sooner than that did. But
yeah, I mean, Switch Sports, you know, Throw me in Nintendo marketing.
Like, I've seen some people say that the Joy-Cons don't work the same as the Wii U, but I mean, they've got gyros.
They don't work the same as the Wii U.
Okay, but like, they've got gyros. Like, what's the big impediment here?
I mean, it's a question of do the games they would make map to the way this thing registers motion versus the way that the Wii Fit Plus registered the Wii Remote Plus registered motion.
Okay. But isn't that something that they can just, I don't know, adapt?
Maybe not. Maybe it would be difficult to adapt, or maybe the game wouldn't feel the same or play right. I can't think of any. I mean, Wonderful 101, I guess. I don't know. Like it's really just a question of, like, is there anything left to port?
Yeah.
Maybe they just run out. Like, I mean, New Super Mario Bros. is a good one, but, like, at what point do they just say, all right, let's just make another one of those?
Well, it's Pikmin 3, but we all assume...
it was Pikmin 4.
We all assume, that sort of Pikmin, this already finished Pikmin game that have just been...
I mean, they start counting backwards.
Maybe Zombie U would be kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, Zombie U's already been ported to other consoles.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, sure.
What if they just announce Pikmin 2? Just say, fuck it. Here's Pikmin 2. You just deal with that. I feel like we might lose somebody off the show for a week because they'd go into shock. But I mean, yeah, it's. I would guess we're probably going to get ports for the rest of this year, and they're just going to keep announcing them. I mean, I would strongly consider buying Xenoblade X again. It's probably a bad decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I would do it.
I think it's a great decision, just personally, but.
I'd be more inclined to do that if they find a way to have it run in portable mode better than 2 does.
I mean, 2 has problems in portable mode. But I would, considering how well they made off-screen play work on that game, I'm maybe not. But just being able to go back online with that game, which I didn't realize I was gonna miss because I'd stopped playing it, but it was a cool mode. We got a whole lot of Donkey Kong, we got some ports, we got a handful of new announcements. Do we get another direct before E3? I have a guess that we get an Indies one.
I think.
I would have thought along those lines is pretty safe.
I checked last year, and there was a direct, like, I think in February, wasn't there?
There was the
Fire Emblem one.
Yeah, the Fire Emblem one was like a couple days after the Japan event,
mm-hmm.
because they showed that teaser of Fire Emblem Warriors, and they said, "But you'll see more of it during a full featured Fire Emblem direct." And that was the Fire Emblem smorgasbord, where they're just like, "Here's 86 Fire Emblem games. Enjoy." But I don't know that we got anything else after that for a while. But this lineup is pretty much sets their table to E3, though. So I'm going to guess, but probably no more big announcements until then. Because I think the latest we have for one is May.
Yeah.
Like at the end of May. I think E3 is kind of early this year. So they could announce something in June and go like, hey, it's coming out July. But I don't know. We'll see. Anybody else have any thoughts, or do I get to talk about SNK Heroine some more?
I want to hear you.
Well,
guys,
I suppose it is
somewhat
notable, I guess, to remember that there was absolutely nothing about 3DS.
No, 3DS. In fact, they explicitly said this is a Switch Direct at the very beginning of the video.
Not that necessarily, you know, they've completely, you know, I've suggested that means they've completely cut the cord or whatever, but it just kind of, you know, it's the considering the horizon, you know, for like the next so many months, you know, I could have imagined a 3DS like little tidbit sort of fitting into this kind of direct, but they didn't even do that.
This is all about the, and I think because they didn't necessarily have any like earth-shattering announcements for Switch, that probably would have tempered their willingness to go like, okay, here's some 3DS stuff. If they had a bunch of things that they like, I mean, they obviously knew this was a relatively smaller direct because they, I mean, it was just a YouTube video. They didn't announce ahead of time. The only reason we knew about it was because EA and also leaks. Yeah. But, you know, if this was a bigger production, they may have felt like they could put some 3DS games in there and it not cause any kind of weird consternation. Because people seem to just hate when a game gets announced for 3DS for some reason. But John, I want you to look at an image because it's relevant to you specifically.
Okay.
From SNK Heroines. And I want you to just tell me, is this not already game of the year 2018, 19, and 20?
Is this the Cool of Diamond one?
This is the Cool of Diamond one.
Why is she carrying a strawberry shortcake?
She's not carrying it. It's just floating.
Okay. Hmm. She looks happy.
I mean, if you had floating strawberry shortcake next to you, you'd be happy too.
Definitely. I mean, definitely that background, it's pretty happy.
Yeah, everything about this is happy. This is just happiness.
So, and she's running off to fight.
I guess.
Right. Oh, I mean.
Or eat that strawberry cake. I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It's just happiness. This game is pure happiness, John.
I don't know if it merits Game of the Year status, but. I'm listening is what I'm saying.
I'm going through the screenshots and all of them have strawberry shortcake on them. I don't know what's going on. I don't care. Anyway.
I guess for this direct, one of the things that surprised me is what we didn't see and the kind of the announcements that we've seen in the past few days for franchises that seem like they would be a good fit for Switch and yet just miss it. I'm thinking specifically of Space Invaders Extreme and Groove Coaster, which were announced by Taito for Steam. And it's just like, are you kidding me? Space Invaders Extreme would be such a good fit for the Switch. And it was on DS, and you know, people loved it. And there's certainly, like, I can't imagine that it's a very demanding game to port to Switch. Like, this is not since this is Square Enix, like, this is not a Final Fantasy 15 scenario. Like, if Square Enix wants to support the Switch, there are easier ways to do that.
You say that, but Square Enix has been having mumblings about, like, maybe we could port this mobile version of Final Fantasy, or maybe we could make Final Fantasy work on Switch after all. Like, it's weird. Like, Taito is Square Enix, you would think.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, they also have
announced... Like, I don't know. Like, they seem to think, like, oh, yeah, like, people want Final Fantasy 15, and I'm... We do want that. Some of us, but like there are so many smaller projects that seem like they would be quicker to get out. And
it may just be the resources for the team making it. Like, they didn't announce that for other stuff either. Like, this is coming to PC,
right?
It may well just be that Taito, as it exists as an entity now, is like a dude, and he's actually an attorney who just manages the licenses. Like, I don't know. I don't know how many people work at Taito these days. Space Invaders Extreme may be done completely offshore for all we know.
Yeah.
Like, there could be a person who has two business cards, and one of them is Chief Corporate Attorney Taito, but his normal one he gives out says Square Enix. Like, I mean, we don't know how much capacity they have to make this thing work, but you're right. That is the kind of thing that I would have expected to see. But conversely, I also expected to see more indie games. They featured two pretty prominently. I thought they were going to do another blowout. They're going to be like, here's seven more ones that you've heard of that are coming to Switch. But there's so many now that, like, I kind of need them to help me. Like, Nintendo, I need your help because there's too many of these damn things. I say that, but, like, Steam gets, like, 200 games a day, it feels like. So, you know, what do I know? And, you know, Steam works so well at Discovery. All right. I'm going to go ahead and call it for our discussion of the Direct. Nobody's got anything pressing besides just more discussion of strawberry shortcake.
Not my favorite character. Dessert.
Not the character, the dessert. Although I would be open to her being in this game, but her owner is notoriously litigious, so that's probably not going to happen. So, on that, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back, we're going to talk about what we've been playing, and maybe some listener mail. Don't know yet. We'll figure it out when we get there. Stay tuned. I'm gonna send listener mail. It's time for new business because we did the direct earlier, and now we're into new business. And I'm gonna kick us off because I played a game from the direct. I did the demo of Dragon Quest Builders, which is coming to Switch soon. The demo came out the day of the direct, so today for those of you listening in the present, which would be the three of us here. If you don't know what Dragon Quest Builders is, it's Square Enix said, man, that Minecraft sure is popular. What if we put Dragon Quest in it? And so if you're following along, in about 2.5 years, you can look forward to Final Fantasy Battlegrounds, because that's about where we're at right now. But it's basically a more linear, like, story-driven Minecraft, which, of course, Minecraft is famously none of those things. It's you're dropped in a world and you do whatever. This game has objectives, it has quests, it has other characters, it has parties. It's apparently, like, based on the bad end of one of the Dragon Quest games.
It's the first one, I believe.
Yeah, where the world's just fallen to ruin. And so this is basically you going and trying to rebuild the world because everyone in the world forgot how to build stuff. They forgot how to create, I believe is how the game words it. Forever. So, like, the first character you meet, so you're sent to the ruins of the town. And basically by this god who tells you, okay, you need to basically rebuild this town. And the first character you meet is going to come live in your town. Is a dumbass. But there's a house that's in ruins, and there's like, by ruins, I mean there's like 5 holes in the wall. And the god tells you, just stack dirt in the holes. It'll be fine. And you stack dirt in the holes. And she goes, oh my god, you built a house. How did you know how to do that? And then she marvels at your ability to light a stick on fire and call it a torch. At which point you wonder, how did these people survive for the 200 years that I was gone? This is probably not so great. But you collect stuff. I mean, it's Minecraft. You harvest goods from the plants, the dirt, the rocks, the animals. You take them back to your base. You make stuff. But as opposed to Minecraft, where you make things as an end, maybe you make things to make bigger things, but ultimately making things is the objective. It's not to do stuff with those things, it's that you've made them. You're making things on behalf of these characters, or for these characters, so that they can help build your town. And so once I had fed her, provided her a bed, a house, torches, because she didn't have light, apparently, all these things, then she said, hey, I bet I could help you. That's my immediate thought was, yeah, you could leave. But she asked me to build her a workhouse, like a workshop, because she was going to learn to build too, because the spirit of creation was now with her. That's the game's words, not mine. And so I had a floor plan that the game gave me, and I had to fill it in with, you know, build the walls for it, put a door on it where it said the door needed to go, put the right furniture in there based on what she was asking for, and then she would be able to get a workshop, and that would complete her quest line. And then she'd be like, hey, I saw another person over there. He sounds crazy. You should invite him into town. So that's actually exactly how she words it. And so you go get that person, bring him over, and then you start their quest lines. The goal being to rebuild this ancient city that was destroyed one brick at a time. And so that's what I'm at right now. And it works. Like, it seems to be a well enough put together Minecraft clone that does stuff differently enough to differentiate itself. And I'm kind of interested at what they do with it, how building this town, you know, advances the more RPG-ish elements of the game. You know, it wouldn't be particularly surprising to anybody who listens to the show that games that tie in town building to progressing a story and building up your town folk to do RPG-esque quests for you would be something that would appeal to me. I've probably talked about a dozen of them on this show. This one is a much more active building process than many games of its ilk, where you would just say, put the building here, please. Here's the resources necessary. But, you know, I only played it for an hour. I don't know how long a demo runs. I ran out of time. Probably doesn't go much further than I've gone. But I'll be interested to see what becomes of this game and if I go ahead and pick it up or not. You know, it's obviously been out for a while on other platforms, but it seemed to run pretty well on Switch. I mean, it looks visually interesting enough for what these. I mean, they didn't. Besides the character models, which aren't Minecraft at all, like, they did not give a fuck if they were accused of copying Minecraft. Like, they did not care. The world is square blocks. But, you know, I'll be interested to see what this game ends up being when I get my hands on it. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up getting it now, just because it seems like an interesting enough time waster. But, you know, we'll see where I'm at when it's time for it to come out. It's not like there's other games to play. Guillaume.
Sure. So, a quick update on Etrid on the C5. I just beat the second boss, and things have really gotten easier. Maybe I've just, I don't know, like, I'm just playing the way that I usually play these games, which is just, like, get as far as I can into the labyrinth until I don't have any, you know, magic points anymore, or until my inventory is full, and then I go back to town, I sell everything, I sleep in the inn, and then I go back exploring. And usually, that way, I don't usually, grind too much, but maybe that's what's been happening in this case, because the game, you know, when I first started talking about it, I found it quite brutal, but that's just not the case anymore. So either they kind of borked the difficulty curve, or, you know, yeah, I kind of grinded too much.
I know you mentioned having some trouble with the first boss, where you had to learn a lesson about how to beat them.
Right.
Did that happen with the second one?
Yeah, not especially. Some NPCs warned me about something that the boss would do, so I equipped my characters in a way that I would avoid that for the most part. But other than that, no. Like that second boss did not have the kind of puzzle element to figure out that the first boss did. Like, the first boss was kind of a strange case. Like, there's an ability that you can use to be able to find out the weaknesses of an enemy, their strengths, and what they're gonna give you. Like, you can analyze the enemies. The first boss was, I don't know, like, was kind of segmented. And that made it so that if you could only analyze one part of him and at a time, and that would take up a turn for one of your characters. And so I think that kind of got in the way of me figuring out what the weakness was and how to beat him. Because I would analyze the big golem's arm, and that turned out to be inconsequential. And what I should have been analyzing was the smaller golems that would pop up when the big golem exploded itself. And so, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I think maybe the problem was a little bit the game, and that first boss was just, like, a poor choice for a first boss. But, yeah, I'm, you know, now that it's more, you know, smoother sailing, I'm enjoying it a lot, and I would recommend it. But I've seen some people on Twitter ask me, like, would you recommend 4 or 5? And because of that kind of high, steep difficulty curve at the beginning, I would go with 4 first. That was my initiation to the series, my introduction, and I think it's a pretty good one. The other game that I've been playing recently, it's a Switch game, but I've been playing it on PC. It's Siberia, this old point-and-click adventure game from the early 2000s. And I had never played it before, but I sure had heard about it. Like, for, you know, at the time, I think I was reading some French video PC game magazines, and also, like, PC Gamer, and you know, I was into PC gaming at the time. But
right.
For whatever reason, I never picked up this particular game. But it was kind of hyped a lot, and it got several sequels. Well, it got one sequel, also, like, the same designer also made La Mer Zone, which also had been really, really hyped. And I guess back in the day, what stood out was the visuals. But because it's the early 2000s, you know, what was impressive back then is a little bit less impressive now. And
it was a lot of the high budget pre-rendered CG stuff.
Right. And that stuff does look great. And Karen commented, like, wow, this game is pretty. And it is. But it's a lot of kind of, you know, it's definitely several years after Myst. You know, the quality is much higher than that. But it's still kind of pretty static. And there's not a whole lot going on each screen. Like, you can marvel at kind of the world that this game built, but it's very kind of sterile because it's a mechanical world. The story is that you're this New York lawyer who is kind of overseeing the takeover of this old toy factory in you know, a remote region of France by this, you know, by Mattel, basically. And so you're in this little small town of Valadilène, and turns out that the person who was selling the plant, the factory, died recently, and that was not supposed to affect the sale at all. But then you get there, and her notary is just like, I'm sorry, but she left this note here that says that there's the secret heir. She has a brother that we thought dead, and turns out that he's very much alive, and you're going to have to find him before, and he'll have to say yes to the transaction before we go forward with this. And so this town is almost deserted. There's not a whole lot of NPCs, but it's kind of populated by these, they call them automatons, but they're so robot-like that it kind of stretches the limit of what you would call an automaton. The game is very simplistic. There's not a whole lot, like, there's nothing in the game really that you can click on that you can't really interact with for a puzzle. In a standard LucasArts adventure game, you will have various red herrings, you will have, like, things to look at, your character will say something funny whenever you look at something, you try to pick up something that you're not supposed to try to pick up. but here, it's very much like there are very few things that you can interact with, and they're going to come up in the puzzle at some point. You would think that, okay, well, having few things to interact with would make the game speedier, and so because you don't waste time clicking on a bunch of stuff, but the game wastes your time in other ways, and it has like these vast kind of screens to explore, these vast screens, because the backgrounds are pre-rendered. And Kate Walker, you have to watch her run around from screen to screen every time. And if you come up to a set of stairs, I'm sorry, but she's going to very robotically step in front of them and then very slowly climb them. And you're going to have to watch that animation every single time. And then essentially, like, the puzzles might be, like, you'll find a key, literally, that you will use in a lock, literally, and that's the extent of the puzzle. And some, you know, to kind of waste your time further, like, the key is going to be several screens away from the lock. And so, I'm not a super fan of this game. It seems like, you know, if you really, really enjoy kind of inserting gears where gears are meant to be inserted in your puzzle games, then boy, I've got a game for you. But other than that, like, it's very simplistic, and I can't really recommend it. Before starting it, I read up on it, and a lot of people praised the story because throughout the game you get phone calls from your boss and your mom and your fiance Dan, you know, people were praising kind of the character arc of Kate Archer. And the thing is, though, like, these characters that call you on your phone all the time, very quickly you realize that they're idiots, you know, like after the first
the great adventure game experience.
Well, you know, like at the very first call I was like, wow, Kate, you gotta ditch Dan. And if you know, I can foresee that that's gonna be what's gonna happen here. Like the second phone call already I'm just like, Jesus Christ, this guy doesn't respect you or your job, and he's just an asset and you need to ditch him. You know, like I can see where this is going. And also I got like one phone call from the mom. She's super overbearing. And some of the negative reviews that I've seen of the game seem to say that these characters start cartoonish, which I agree with, and they just get cartoonier. So, you know, like I don't know. I think that what might have been considered good video game writing in the early 2000s is not really cutting it today in 2017. So, yeah, I can't recommend it, especially since on the Switch, like I got this game for free. They were giving it away on GOG.com, but on the Switch, it's $40. And it was on sale recently for half price, $20. But that's still a lot to ask for, you know, over a 15-year-old game.
Yeah.
And this is all kind of to hype up the most recent game, Cyberia 3, which came out only maybe in the last year. I would have thought it would make more sense to discount these games. You know, sure, like, port them to Switch, but discount them heavily so that people are interested in getting the third game. But nope, just full price. Not even like a collection. Like you get Cyberia 1 and 2, a two-pack for $40. No, it's $40 each. And that's a lot to ask. It's weird.
Yeah, I was surprised by the same thing you noted. I was like, I thought when they announced Cyberia, I thought they were announcing a collection. Because that would make sense. And then no, it wasn't. It was individual games. I thought, well, no thanks.
Yeah, and like, you know, $40 here, but it's only a download. There's a physical version, but only in Europe. And, I get, you know, that makes sense. It's where most of this game's fans are. But you would, I don't know. I guess they can't discount it on the North American eShop because then, you know, Europeans would also just like switch their region to North America, buy it on the eShop.
I mean, that happens already, though. Like, there's a whole website that just tracks that.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm saying is they didn't think that the physical version would sell well enough for North America, but they still have to price it like a retail game because otherwise people are going to take advantage of the lower North American eShop price. Anyway, there's nothing else to say about this. It's
avoid.
It's a middle of the road old adventure game, and I gave myself permission to not see it through when I saw I was maybe a third of the way in, and I was not really enjoying it, and I went and bought Thimbleweed Park.
There you go.
Yeah,
which is a game that is not what is an older. I mean, it is an older style adventure game, but isn't quite so tedious.
Yeah.
It has its moments, though. Just a fair warning. It has its moments. You're going to be like, fuck you. What do you want me to do?
Well, that's fine.
Don't be afraid to Google, because there were a couple where I'm like, fuck this. The hint system's not helping. Just because, like, what it wanted you to do was not there was an obvious answer to what it wanted you to do, and that wasn't the one that it actually wanted. And so it became hard to see the forest for the trees. So, John, you've got a couple non-Nintendo games that we might want to hear about, so why don't you go ahead and give us enough information to decide if we want to hear more?
Well, one actually is available on Switch, so I guess you could call it a Nintendo game.
I would like you to end with that one, please.
All right. So just a kind of the game of the moment, I guess you could say, is PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. And I have played that on Xbox One. I got it kind of out of curiosity. Didn't really have any plans on really getting into it at all, but I was very curious about kind of what it brought to the table as opposed to other kind of third-person shooters, first-person shooters. So so this game is in game preview, so it's a little bit janky here and there, but the thing is, the core gameplay is it's really compelling. So, and I mean, a lot of first-person shooters, when you boil them down, I mean, you could strip off a lot of junk. Like, I mean, Battlegrounds, it doesn't have any of the kind of, you know, perk systems or experience or any of that. It does, like, you do actually gain Battlegrounds points, which you can then spend on, like, cosmetic stuff. But, and, you know, this is not to say that they may not add some system like
that.
They
will absolutely add systems like that in the future. 100%.
Yes, they absolutely will. But right now, it's like, what's there is perfectly fine.
There'll be consumable pay-to-win perks in this game.
Absolutely, at some point. But for right now, you know, just the core gameplay is there. And, you know, it's really fun because it's effectively, it's a game of hide-and-seek with guns. Right now in the Xbox One version, there is a single...
I always play hide-and-seek.
Right now in the Xbox One version, there's only this single map. But I think on PC, they also have a desert map called Miramar. So there's two maps on the PC version on Xbox One, but that map is coming soon to Xbox One.
Yeah, the PC version is considered actually released.
Yeah, they actually did just release 1.0, and I think Xbox One is at like 0.5 something something something. So so they're still working on it, you know, smoothing out things like frame rate and stuff like that. But I must say that so what you do, if for those that haven't played it or haven't even investigated it, you start off and you're flying over an island. And you parachute out of a plane, and you choose where you would like to land on the island. And a lot of that is based on, you know, tactically where, like, because you can also see other players parachuting out of the plane as well. So you kind of have sometimes, you know, you don't always see players parachuting out around you, but especially when you get close to the ground, you will see other players nearby potentially, and you usually try to drop between, you know, next to like, you know, a cluster of buildings, because those buildings, they're what house the guns that you can pick up. You know, not only guns, but also stuff like, you know, bulletproof vests, helmets and stuff like that that can help you out. Grenades.
Health.
Flashbangs, yes. First aid kits, stuff like that. So all those supplies, you have to scavenge them. So typically, you know, you'll drop next to, like, there'll be a house there or an apartment complex or something like that. And all of it, the motif is sort of like vaguely Eastern European kind of thing. So that's kind of like the vibe they're going for. And so your goal is 100 people come in and you have to survive all the way to the very end and be the last man standing. And that is pretty much it. You parachute down to the ground, you sneak around, and a lot of times it'll only be you for a while. And at first I was like, ah, this is kind of boring. But the thing is it actually adds a level of suspense to it, because you don't see anybody, but you're always looking for people. And sometimes, and there's cars around that you can hop into. There's like, you know, kind of Jeeps, dune buggies and stuff like that, that kind of stuff. but the main conceit is that you're within this big circle that is constantly decreasing in size. And when you're outside of that circle, your health gets impacted. So eventually you will die. So what it does is it corrals everybody and forces everybody into a central point where they have to fight it out to the death.
And when you start, right? You don't know where that's going to be.
Exactly. Once you get on the ground, you see it. So you kind of have to figure out – that's like – so you kind of work through it strategically. Like, okay, well, where am I on the map? Okay, I got to get some guns. I got to get maybe a bulletproof vest or first aid kits or whatever. The first thing you have to do is arm yourself, because you'll hear footsteps of people around and you'll hear gunshots. And so you're kind of trying to figure out where other people are, you know, you kind of where you're going, you know, kind of playing defensively. And then you're like, okay, well, where am I compared to the circle?
I got a whole ass.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you're far away from the circle, you got to start moving towards the middle of it. And how quickly you do that all depends. That's the cool thing about this game, is that there's a lot of leeway for how you can play. You can be aggressive or you can be completely defensive. If you want, I mean, I've had games where I've been one-on-one with a person right out of the gate. So I drop down to the ground and that person drops right beside me and we're duking it out. And what's funny about, you know, because, you know, even if you're not armed, what I actually enjoy about this game is that the aiming is a little bit janky. It's not very precise, so it's not like – they do have a first-person shooter mode, but I haven't played that yet, so I've been playing third-person. And so, as you can imagine, aiming in third-person is kind of janky, But I like that. It's just kind of funny. Like, especially like if you're punching people, it's just kind of ridiculous because both of you are just like wildly flailing at each other inside this ridiculous Eastern European house, and it's just kind of silly. But yeah, so you're always trying to like you're always trying to think, okay, you know, how am I going to play this? If there are a lot of people around, should I lie in wait for them? Because if you stay in one place, you might get caught outside the circle, and then, you know, your health goes down pretty quickly, and especially if you run across somebody and your health is low, you're done almost instantly because they'll kill you quickly. So you have to make some tactical choices. But I mean, it's completely viable to make your way to the middle of the circle and just sit there and wait for people. Or you can, if that bores you, you can be aggressive and kind of sneak around and try to sneak up on people. And, so you'll have kind of these points in the game where, you know, you'll be sitting there in a house and nobody's around and, you know, you're just kind of doing your thing, scrounging and trying to pick up some guns and maybe reload your guns, because it doesn't do a lot of stuff for you. It kind of forces you, to kind of, I think, add to some of the suspense or urgency. It doesn't, like, you don't pick up guns, you know, you have to reload your gun as soon as you pick it up, right? You have to load it. So you have to get the ammo, get the gun, and then you have to load the gun. You don't just pick it up and start blasting. So there's this kind of like, you know, you have to do things. You have to always keep your eye out, you know. It kind of like ramps up that urgency where you're like, you know, I have to, you know, hide so nobody knows that I'm here. And one of the things that you do if you enter a house, you manually open and close doors. So a lot of times, when things start out, all of the doors are closed. So you can typically tell if someone has been in a house by whether or not the door is closed. So what I do is I typically go into a house and I close the door just so it looks like nobody's been there. You're always trying to, like, you know, not give yourself away. You're trying to stay in the shadows. If you have to run across an open field, you have to do that. You know, you can sprint, but you're always trying to kind of like stay out of the open, be mindful of who might be around you. So it's different. There's a lot of there's like a stealth element to it too. So yeah, and I have yet to win a match. I think the best I've placed is fifth. But yeah, what'll happen is you'll get into the central area and people are around you and people will, you know, sneak up on you. And so what you usually do is you'll find a good hidey hole and get all your guns loaded up and just kind of wait. Or, you know, or you'll hear footsteps and, you know, you'll try to sneak up on people and, you know, unload on them and stuff. And so it's fun. It's a fun game. I can see why it's as successful as it has been. Because it's easy to understand. The goal is easy to understand. You don't have to be some first-person shooter master that knows all the arcane ins and outs of some perk, you know, system. This is the best gun this week. There's a meta. Certainly, there's a meta like there is for every game. But it's not necessary to understand it to really enjoy the game.
And there is this game more than most. There is a significant luck component. Like, I landed in the right spot. I got the right gear. I was here first.
Yes. Yep. There is definitely that kind of element. Now it was interesting. I was watching a stream of one of the guys playing it, and somebody asked him about esports, and he said, "Well, the esports will be in the squad mode, where like you will like it's like you and a friend team up." And he said, you know, if you're just playing this by yourself, there's really no esports in it because it's just kind of luck of the draw. Like, not only the guns you get, but also do you get the jump on somebody? You can't do anything really tactical with it. Whereas when you're playing with somebody else, when you're playing co-op, you know, you can use one guy to lure somebody out and then the other guy takes them out. You can kind of like call your shots like that, and you can plan and coordinate stuff and pull people out of their hiding spots and you know, one guy watches this area and then you watch another area. There's planning involved, whereas if you're just playing, you know, solo, you're just pretty much, you know, whoever gets the best gun, maybe somebody is able to snipe and can take people out. But that's still fun. But yeah, I can just see it's a very easy game to understand. And also, you know, when you get killed, you just hop into the next game. There's no It's just very quick, so you can sit there and just play round after round after round. And even completing an entire round is usually maybe about, you know, 15 minutes or so. It's not some, you know, it's not some huge slog.
It's very well suited to streaming, which is of course why it took off.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And you can also kind of tailor the experience to, like I said, you can kind of stay alive as long as you feel like, you know, depending on how you play.
Super conservative, or you can say like, I'm gonna go out there and I'm just gonna fuck around. I'm gonna see if I can do this. Mm-hmm. I mean, pretty much every screenshot I've seen of someone winning, they might have no more than 3 kills.
Yeah.
I saw one where they posted they won and they had no kills, which means the last person died through natural causes effectively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that can happen too. I mean, you could theoretically be, you know, it could be you and one other person and they're sitting there. Maybe. So let's say something like this happens. There's 3 of you left. The number 2 guy kills the number 3 guy. And then he's trying to, because you can loot the person's corpse after you kill them.
Right.
Well, what can happen while you're doing that is the circle can expand beyond you and kill you. So if you're low on health and you're looting somebody's corpse, I've had that happen to me where I'm taking too long to loot the person's corpse. I'm not keeping track of where the kind of death circle is. And next thing I know, I'm dead. So that could easily happen. You could easily win a game like that. So you have to always kind of keep your wits about you and be aware of what you're doing and what's going on around you. So, yeah. But it's a fun game. And actually, the controls, there's a lot of inventory management, but they do a really good job of that on Xbox One. So, like, once you get the hang of the controls, they're pretty good. So, yeah, that's interesting. The other game that I played that actually is on Switch is Thumper, which is a rhythm game that I bought just kind of on a lark. You know, flying by the seat of my pants, James, as I like to say.
I don't want to hear any more about the seat of your pants.
And that is a rhythm game that originally started out as a VR game, and I can see that. I found that out afterwards because the first thing I said when I started playing this game is like, boy, this would actually be a game that would be really good in VR, which doesn't come out of my mouth very often. So this is a rhythm game that is extremely trippy and kind of disturbing. Very much, it's unlike really any other rhythm game I've played. You're this kind of scarab beetle rushing down a track. And of course, you know, there's, you know, shapes will come down the track and you have to, of course, you know, time your button presses to when you go over these things, and then that adds to the music that's going on. You know, it'll add, you know, drums or whatever. All of the visuals are very almost kind of, I would say they're kind of like res, but they're not. They're very angular, sort of almost insect-like kind of visuals, like just that, you know, with kind of like almost like insect-like legs coming out of the track and around you. And so what you're trying to do is you're trying to navigate to the beat, of course. You have to like, you know, have certain button press combos to like get around corners. And what they'll do is they'll, you know, have, you'll come into a corner and you'll have to like, you know, hit the button twice, and then you'll have to press to the left and the button to navigate the corner properly, because you have a shield. Your beetle has a shield. So the less button presses that you make and the worse you do, the quicker your shield gets depleted, and eventually your beetle blows up. You hit checkpoints, and at the end of, I think I made it to like a level, I haven't made it past the first level, but I played for quite a while because it gets pretty difficult. I think I played to, 113, which is the final boss of the first level. And, that's pretty, the way the boss levels work is you have to hit a number of button presses in a row and, navigate corners and stuff in a row in order to get a green, crystal, I guess you could call them. And that turns into a shot that goes down the track and hits the boss at the very end of the track. And you have to do that, I think, 3 times, and then the boss is destroyed, and then you move on. But yeah, incredibly fast-paced. Very, it's the kind of game that you want to turn off all the lights and play in a dark room and put on some headphones and just kind of like vibe out to it, because it's really intense music, intense visuals, and really, really engrossing and addictive, because it gets difficult, but it's never so difficult that you don't think you can pull it off. It's always, you know, you'll just miss something. You'll just miss a turn, or maybe you won't stay in a turn far enough along. You'll let go of the button, or let go of the stick before you come out of the turn. It'll damage your shield. Like, you can always, you it's very obvious what you screwed up. So yeah, I think it's a great game. I mean, I'll definitely play a lot more of it. There's online leaderboards. On our site, we reviewed it and gave it an 85 out of 100, yep. Which I would agree with. I'd say the game's probably not for everybody, you know, but it's, if you want a rhythm game and if that's your bag, it's really good and really unique and not like many other games I've played. When you first play it, you're like, wow, this is actually kind of weird and disturbing. So, yeah. It's good.
But you were saying, like, you want to play it in the dark and with headphones. Do you think that some of the, this, I don't know, disturbing factor would still survive if you were playing on a Switch on portable mode? Or I guess, like, yeah, like, you can always have headphones, but the yep. Do you think the smaller screen would get in the way of the experience?
Probably a bit. I think it would. It's a game. Now, I think it would probably lessen the experience a bit, but I think the intensity probably wouldn't be lowered very much. But it is a game that you definitely want to immerse yourself in, because, you know, everything is about that kind of that pounding beat, and just, you know, kind of getting zoned into the game. So playing portably, I don't think playing
HD
portably
Rumble
would really add much. Right. Yeah, that might be good. Yeah. Yep. So.
Cool.
But yeah, it's still a good game. Very good game.
All right. So, Greg, I know you're still deep in the throes of Xenoblade.
Yeah, we're very close to finishing, I think, but I've not done it yet, so I kind of prefer to rather.
Are you delaying finishing it, or
no? I've got going at a decent sort of clip now, but it is quite protracted, as you might imagine. I'm close to finishing, but I'd rather reserve comment until I actually have finished.
Yeah, it's a thing. All right, that's fair. So, because we're kind of light on new business, I think we've got time for one or two emails. But since we didn't do any last week, you could send your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And I'm just going to go ahead and read this email, and then we'll probably call it. So, this is from Vincent, who asks, "Hey RFN crew. My 4-year-old son recently fell hard into the Mario series. He watches me play, he watches YouTube videos, he plays with my old Mario toys. It's cute. Even when we're not playing actual games, we'll roleplay as Mario in the backyard or at the park. But this past weekend we were playing and he said, 'Daddy, you're Wario, I'll be Waluigi.' I'm clearly raising a monster. A monster who aspires to be Waluigi. It's too late for Waluigi, but there are other worse characters I should hide... Excuse me. It's too late for Waluigi, but are there other worse characters I should hide my son from? Thanks, and keep up the good work." And then he parenthetically notes, commiserates for Greg for the loss of the Buffalo Bills and aspires that it won't be 4 console generations to make it back to the playoffs.
Yeah, which, you'd hope so, wouldn't you?
Which is just twisting the knife. Like,
I know. But, law of averages and all that.
Yes. So, I mean, I think immediately we have to say that's not... There should be a parental guidance. You know, the parental guidance app should include a setting for please don't show my son Waluigi.
See, this is a problem because they don't have like the cinematic intro like they did for Mario Tennis on GameCube, where it shows Waluigi being a loser.
And Mr. Eyeballs. Yeah.
You know what I mean? The fact that in the old days that they had more like accompanying things like that, I don't think a kid would watch that video and want to identify with Waluigi because he's a cheater and the loser simultaneously, which is never a good combination.
Dude, that's like if you're a cheater and a winner, like, you know what? You did it. If you're a cheater and a loser, like, dude, I mean, at least it shows you're trying though. Like you're after it. You're getting after it. So maybe there's some merit in that, in the effort, in the hustle. I don't know that Waluigi with a tennis visor and a coif is going to make this any better.
Mm. I'm just really fixated on a TV show called My Son Waluigi. I can't get that out of my head.
John, I want a pilot on my desk by Monday.
There's a chance it could.
Give me a spec script.
It could get made. It could get picked up. Nintendo are loosening the reins on the intellectual property now. You never know.
They've made it clear they want to have the deal done for the Mario movie soon. I mean, get me a spec script. I'll do what I can.
All right, let me whip something up over the weekend.
My Son Waluigi. Jesus fucking Christ. Wah! It's just the entire theme song is just made from his whaz.
A boy was born that day. Wah! Coming straight out of the womb saying that.
Oh. That
with the mustache.
Yes, with the mustache.
With the hat. Mustache. Like he comes out wearing the hat and the mustache. It's exactly his face. Like it's not any different. They didn't babyfy. His face is totally normal. It's just on a baby's body. I wonder deeply, like, what about Waluigi was appealing? Like, what made a child go, like, that's what I want? And I think maybe we try to aspire too much logic to the behavior of children.
Mm.
Having been around a number of them relatively recently as relatives decided to have them, that, like, you realize that sometimes their behavior isn't motivated by rational thought and logical outcomes. Sometimes it's motivated simply by sheer randomness. And so maybe Waluigi was just appealing enough because he's different. Now, the question of what characters should you keep your child away from, there are real risks here. There are real problems. And I guess the question is, how influenced would your child be by the quest for holy protein? Because
you really got to work hard to make sure that I don't stumble across that universe of characters, haven't you? You know,
I'm not saying it's a difficult outcome to avoid, but it's worth the effort just to make sure. Like your house probably isn't going to have a carbon monoxide problem. It's pretty uncommon, but you should have the sensors up anyway. You should definitely have the sensors that look out for Emperor Builder and his ilk.
Yeah, sensors with a C. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, this is true. I'm trying to think of what character meets that criteria.
Where do you stand on Tingle, James, if you had a child?
Tingle enslaved a bunch of adults and made them dress up in his fetish wear. I'm, you know what? Go for it. He achieved his dream.
Strong words.
Strong leadership from Tingle. He imprisoned them on an island of his own creation to do nothing.
And you find him in prison as well.
That's true.
Really remember
keep in mind, exactly. He was a prisoner and within days had established his rule, his iron-fisted rule, which, you could say a lot of things about Tingle, but he's a real go-getter. So, just saying. Tingle, follow your dreams.
The only thing that comes to mind to me is around puberty, you don't want your son around Sonic characters, apparently. Because something happens. It's really weird. They make associations or something. I don't know.
Oh, geez.
And next thing you know, he's drawing, you know, fan art of pregnant tails or whatever.
we don't need a Mistakes in the Miracles reference on this show. Thank you.
I can't argue with that. I also can't condone it.
But what if it was the collector's edition, John? Then could you condone it?
I might buy it. I wouldn't unwrap it, if you know what I'm saying.
I don't condone this, but I'm going to buy it. I feel like there's probably something really obvious that we're missing here, and we're just...
I'm trying to think of the, you know, because I'm trying to think of the video game equivalent. You think of Wall Street, the movie. And
yeah.
So Oliver Stone, well-known lefty Oliver Stone, makes a caricature, a grotesque caricature of a rich guy.
He's basically supposed to be the devil, but not.
Yeah, you know, just he writes a character that's meant to sort of, you know, sum up, you know, embody everything that's wrong, yeah, everything that Oliver Stone thinks is wrong with capitalism or whatever. And then this clunkingly unsubtle character, people like him unironically and actually think, yes, I aspire to be like that guy. Even though he's just, you know, he may as well have had a cape on and twirled a moustache. Like, it's that ridiculous. I'm trying to think if there is something like that in games where it's like, well, you know...
I mean, there's Tom Nook.
A character that, you know, even though you might think, well, no one's ever going to aspire to be like that. But actually, maybe they will, you know, that it's even if you have really giant signposts that say, this guy's bad, sometimes people don't take the hint. And, I don't know, Travis Touchdown, maybe?
Yeah, I don't think
he really shouldn't be an aspirational character, but there's bound to be somebody that thought, oh, he's cool.
Travis's entire... His entire conceit is like, man, he wants to be cool so bad.
Yeah, it's true. Though he's clearly meant to be quite a sad character, but
at the same time, like, there is something appealing about Travis in that.
Yeah, some people probably do, you know, see him as an aspirational figure, nonetheless.
I guess the question is, do you protect?
If you had a kid, would you want to protect him from? You know, seeing certain characters aspirational when they really shouldn't. And Waluigi fits into that category, I guess.
Who's going to look at Waluigi and go like, yeah, that's it. That's the life.
Apparently it happened, though. There was role-play and everything. We've got a first-hand account.
It's true. I mean, again, I'm not so sure that... This is just honest childhood. Like, I'm not worried that I'm not worried that somebody's gonna walk into their guidance counselor. I want to be Waluigi when I grow up, and then the alarms can go off. The SWAT team can
just
go
this
in.
This is at the age where it just comes out more kind of unfiltered and natural. It'll get sort of buried beneath it. But,
your theory is that this won't go away.
Oh yeah, well, not unless it's nipped in the bud.
They just won't say it out loud.
Parenting, yeah, exactly. The penchant for purple will just sort of simmer away in the background.
Yeah, I mean, he'll get beat up on the schoolyard for saying he likes Waluigi at some point, and then he'll just know, you know. It's the way society works. I mean, you know, you come into the schoolyard, you say you like Waluigi, somebody punches you in the face. It's the way it is. It's the way kids learn. It's the way kids learn. You know, it's the way kids are kept in check.
Is that why we never seem to actually accomplish anything on this show? I can't punch you in the face.
This is true. This whole thing is just a bunch of, like, unchecked... There's no checks and balances here. It's just a bunch of unfiltered bullshit.
That's probably the deepest anyone's ever cut on this show, John.
We're all sitting here. We're all just a bunch of kids on the schoolyard saying we like Waluigi and no one can punch anybody. That's what this podcast is all about. I don't know how we got here, but we're here, so we might as well just accept it.
Fuck you, John! God damn it!
It's probably a good time to wrap the show up.
I don't even have anywhere to go with this! Don't let your kid be Duke Nukem!
Yeah, that's sound advice.
What's Hakan? Don't let your kid see Hakan from Street Fighter. He covers himself in oil and occasionally sets himself on fire. It's not great. It's not solid life lessons.
Drake from Uncharted, you're always keen about going on about what a mass murderer he is.
Don't shoot lots of people. Yeah,
yeah,
it's probably,
he's got the snark thing down, so people might think he's cool.
That's true. There is a portion of that in play. I'm walking to the edge of like maybe don't let them see Poppy.
Oh god. Because
they might think Poppy's really funny, and Poppy is really funny, but actually having Poppy around would be a nightmare. Always just kind of dancing in the corner to music only she can hear. And then laying down the harshest truth as only a child can. I'm just saying, maybe that one, you know, there's some appeal there, but not all the way. It's just not all the way there. What video game character should you let them see? Who do you want them to aspire to be?
A positive role model.
Yeah, like oh, God. Don't let your kids see Mighty Number 9, but you can let them see Mega Man. Mega Man's got Mega Man believes in himself and then murders all of his siblings, but he believes in himself in the process. Like he gets there. He makes it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. He fights for everlasting peace, so that we don't have to.
That's right. I'm going to bring you peace by making you into pieces. Which feels like something Zero would have said.
He's killing robots, so.
They have a soul, John.
Come on.
Canonically, they have DNA soul. It is a thing.
Oh, boy.
I've seen that was John's response to Blade Runner when he first got. Yeah, come on. I mean, yeah, you saw all this shit about attack ships on fire, but come on. You're a fucking robot. I mean, how amazing could it have been, really?
Yeah, I mean.
Oh.
Come on, Rucker Hauer, come on.
Come on.
Tears in the rain, come on. I mean.
I'm not gonna say that Bowser's a good role model, but. There is a certain amount of never giving up.
Yeah, that's true.
In Odyssey, that's a big thing about, like, man, he just doesn't give up, does he? And, you know, he plans and he executes. For all of his failures, like, he sure puts together some complicated plans.
I mean, if you want to talk about heroes, let's talk about Steve Hewitt.
He dies in 30 seconds, John.
He's a hero. He sacrificed his life.
There's not enough time for a kid to fall in love with him.
At least he hasn't got a messiah complex, though. He's just dead. Because you don't want your kid to have a messiah complex, which is a legitimate problem from playing video games. Because, you know, it is always like, you can have your cake and eat it. You know, you can save everyone. Especially if you pay for the third path of Fire Emblem Fates. So, you know, like it's. I think that's a good thing to teach the kids. It's just, look, he's dead. He's in the lava. There's no cheat code. Yeah. There's nothing that can bring him back. He's just dead. Get over with it.
You see the whole character arc. You see the man's rise and fall.
Which is funny because literally no one gets over the fact Steve Hewitt died. In fact, the entire reason that game happens is people can't get over the fact that Steve Hewitt's dead.
The thing is, if they could have just seen that he had his thumb up as he went into the lava, that was Terminator.
Oh, God.
But you know what? I thought about it for a second. Like, did they really do that? Because they could have.
For a second there, I was like, did I remember that right?
If I was going to die in molten metal or lava, you better believe the thumb is going up.
The only
sort of solace of it is like, well, this is one of the more painful ways to die. On the other hand,
hopefully you get this reference.
Remember that bit from the movie?
I never saw Terminator. Shit, this is wasted. I mean, you go Steve, but Steve doesn't fight a fire tornado. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not recommending your 4-year-old fight a fire tornado. I'm going to go ahead and say
the impression that he can.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's probably not a great decision.
First, we should be under the impression that he exists. I mean, that's...
But he has a lot of muscle shirts that he wears well, to be fair. He saves a bunch of people. He gets over his personal demons, the loss of his friend, and the fact that his friend's sister keeps telling him to stay away doesn't deter him, but he's not creepy about it. He's just trying to give her a watch. That's all. Mm-hmm. And in the end, he takes down a bunch of terrorists, and he does kill a lot of people, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true.
But
yeah,
they all deserved it, though.
Going on about Drake, I mean. Yeah.
But he fights a mech with a handgun. Mm-hmm. Drake ain't doing that. He rescues a little girl from a fire and a bear and something else.
A fire
else.
Bear?
No. Probably.
Really. I mean, he could have done, but there isn't actually a fire bear.
No, there should have been.
There should have been, definitely.
I mean, I think he lives a life we all could see ourselves living.
Of utter misery.
it is a little bit like a Death Wish at this point, where it's happens to this one guy.
The 24, I mean, he was obviously very patterned on 24. And at least they do hammer home the point in 24 that Bauer is really miserable. He's like the most miserable man alive.
Yeah, there's
the only thing that can make him feel alive is torturing people for information.
There's a beautiful video that describes like what's the most lethal place to be in 24's universe, and the list is like being the president, being Jack Bauer's enemy, being Jack Bauer's partner, being Jack Bauer's family, and the safest place to be is being Jack Bauer, because even when he tries to shoot himself, like his gun fails.
Oh yeah, he's invincible, much like Ray. Yeah,
Ray isn't. I mean, Ray fought a fire tornado. I mean, he must be invincible. He took down an entire army. What were they? SWAT team? Where they were like special forces? I don't even fucking remember. John does though, because he remembers the name of a character who dies in 35 seconds.
I mean, I just look at my arm and I see the Steve Hewitt tattoo on it, and it's just pretty.
John literally starts the game up, watches the opening cinematic, closes the game, and hits new game.
I just sigh. I give a long sigh, and then I'm like, let's repeat that.
John's never made it off that volcano.
I don't need to. My heart is still up there, James.
In the lava.
Have any of us really left that volcano?
Not on this podcast, that's for damn sure.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this week. I'm glad we picked a strong email candidate. You too
don't
can...
let your kids play Disaster.
Or do. Fuck it. Who knows? Maybe they'll love it. Maybe don't let your kids listen to this podcast.
Yeah, that's very much true. I would say protect your kids from John Lindemann, especially.
that is probably wise.
Yeah, just be like Carl's brother, you know. Very vigilant.
Yeah, you know. Just,
that joke one day will be as old as Carl was in that joke.
Yeah, we've been at this for 10 years.
But that's going to do it for email this week. If you need parenting advice from this sterling collection of parenting experts, you can send an email to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Remember, if your kid's misbehaving, just put them outside. What's the worst that could happen? And on that, it's time to wrap up the show. Greg, do we have any music this week?
We do. I have a request from quite some time ago that I wanted to get around to using. It's quite an obscure choice, but I quite enjoy having stuff that is new to my ears to share at the end of this. So this is from Adrian. He suggests a Super Famicom game that was never brought to the West. This is Sword World. Second Super Famicom game based on Sword World, which was a sort of pen and paper RPG that was released in Japan at the end of the 80s, and then had a couple of Famicom games, Super Famicom games, I should say, based on it come out from T&E Soft, who I mostly know for golf games, I think, on the N64. But, he's... finds this soundtrack to be highly underrated, in Adrian's word, and he wanted to go with the title theme from it, and very good, much as you might imagine. But if you're a big fan of Super Famicom, Super Nintendo, RPG soundtracks, but yeah, I rather like this.
Oh, cool. Well, that's fun. If you've got any really obscure but nice suggestions, please let us know. We're excited to see them. Or hear them, I suppose. And on that, it's time to go. Bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.